This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
South Africa is marking its annual Freedom Day holiday amid continuous calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down, where demonstrations were organized by an alliance of opposition parties, religious groups, labor unions, and civil society.
That's Tuso Kamalo reporting from Pretoria, South Africa. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, an African Union tribunal in Senegal rejects the appeal of former Chadian President Hissen Habre. A Burkina Faso court postpones the start of the trial of ex-President Blaise Compaoré and his former cabinet. And Gambian President Adama Barrow is on a West Africa tour and will visit Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ghana. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, an African Union tribunal in Senegal has rejected the appeal of former Chadian President Hissen Habre, who was convicted last year of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Sophia Christensen reports from the courtroom in Dakar.
Malian Supreme Court Judge Ougédé Wafi delivered the verdict on the appeal Thursday. Former Chadian President Hissen Habre's conviction for war crimes, crimes against humanity and torture stands. The court overturned his conviction for rape. Habre will serve his sentence, life in prison. He has been ordered to pay $135 million in reparations to over 7,000 victims and relatives of victims. A few of the 100 victims who testified during the trial were present in the court Thursday. Philemine Gengeng suffered 2 years of imprisonment and torture during the Habre regime. He founded a victims association in Chad and began gathering testimony of other survivors soon after Habre was toppled in a coup in 1990 and fled to Senegal.
Emotion de satisfaction, de victoire.
Gengeng says he feels satisfaction and victory. But he says now we have to make sure the reparations are paid. This is what I am expecting, and only then will I be completely satisfied. Habre was not in the court Thursday. He had refused to recognize the court's authority, and his lawyers did not take part in the trial. The court-appointed defense said it was not surprised by the outcome of the appeal.
Bah écoutez, je dirais que ma réaction est sans trop de surprise. Hein.
Habre's court-appointed attorney, Mounir Balal, said the judgment was to be expected. My team and I made it a point to focus on the rape charges, and they were dropped. For the rest, nothing changes. Habre ruled Chad for 8 years, during which rights groups estimate he was responsible for the deaths of over 40,000 people before he was deposed in 1990. Thursday's verdict marked the end to a more than two-decade campaign by Habre's victims to bring him to justice. The Extraordinary African Chambers was created within the Senegalese justice systems to try Habre in 2013. It was funded by the international community, and the trial began in July 2015. Chadian lawyer Jacqueline Mudena is lead counsel for the victims.
Oui, je dirais à toute l'Afrique que c'est possible. Tout est possible.
She says the verdict today sends a strong message to all African dictators. It is possible for little people to bring big fish to justice. Watch out, she says. You will no longer remain unpunished. This was a trial of firsts, the first time an African leader was tried on African soil by an African court. For some, the Habre trial could represent a new model for justice as the International Criminal Court faces resistance from some African countries. Reed Brody is an American lawyer who has worked with Habre's victims since 1999. He says this is about multiplying the pathways that lead to justice. What is important is to give victims hope and to show them that justice can be made on the African continent. Earlier this week, Habre victims traveled to Banjul to meet victims of alleged abuses under Gambia's former president, Yahya Jammeh, who fled to Equatorial Guinea in January after a regional standoff over the disputed election. Clément Abaifuta is the president of the Chadian Victims Association.
Vous savez, nous avons fait une expérience de 26 ans.
He says the Habre ruling is the outcome of 26 years of hard work. Now we are available to help others. We are going to offer our experience to Gambia so they too can find justice. Habre will serve his sentence in Senegal or another country in the African Union. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
A Burkina Faso court has postponed the start of the trial of ex-President Blaise Compaoré and his former cabinet. The accused are being tried for their alleged role in the violent crackdown on the 2014 uprising that ultimately ended Compere's nearly three decades in power. Bram Posthumus has the latest from Ouagadougou.
The much-anticipated trial of former President Blaise Compaoré and almost his entire former cabinet was supposed to start Thursday. But instead, it was adjourned before it even began. According to sources within the Ministry of Justice, there was a scheduling conflict. The Lawyers Association of Burkina Faso is holding its annual reunion, so the lawyers were at their official banquet and not at the trial. A few showed up, but only to request the hearing be adjourned. This was granted by the court's president, Mathieu Ouédraogo. The former government is on trial for allegedly authorizing the use of force against protesters in late October 2014. The popular uprising would cost Compaoré his presidency. According to the official toll, 24 people lost their lives during those 2 days. But the case before the court concerns the deaths of 7 demonstrators, shot dead allegedly by security forces. In all, 32 members of the former government are on trial. Compaoré is being tried in his capacity as Minister for Defence, a post he also held at the time of his ouster. Much of Burkina Faso's civil society, which drove the uprising and has documented abuses that went on at the time, is turning its back on the proceedings. A prominent civil society figure present at the court Thursday made an impromptu statement immediately after the adjournment.
Normalement, en temps normal, ça devrait être un espoir.
Safiatou López-Zongo said that she held no hope at all that justice would be served. This is a spectacle on behalf of people who are guiding this from behind their desks, though she declined to name exactly who those people might be. Proponents of the trial say it sends a clear signal that nobody can escape justice, but critics dismiss it as political score settling.
Ce procès-là vise un seul objectif, c'est de condamner les ex.
According to Isaka Lingani, the editor-in-chief of L'Opinion, which is close to the former ruling party, the trial serves to clear up the remaining bits of the previous government. Justice, in his opinion, will never be served. NGOs have pointed accusing fingers at the military, especially the now disbanded Special Presidential Guard. They are allegedly responsible for the deaths and injuries that occurred in October 2014. But no military personnel are on trial today. Why? That question remains unanswered. The prosecutor was not available for an interview. As for Compaoré, he remains in Ivory Coast, where he fled after his ouster and has since taken citizenship. The trial is now expected to begin May the 4th. Bram Posthumus for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
Gambian President Adama Barrow is on a West Africa tour and will visit Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ghana. Barrow took office in January after defeating longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh in December's presidential election. However, he needed the support of West African states and their militaries to convince Jammeh to step down and leave the country. His West Africa tour will focus on trade and other issues. To learn more about Barrow's early days in office, VOA's William Eagle spoke to Pandarian Bai, founder and editor of the online Freedom newspaper.
President Adama Barrow and his delegation arrived in Freetown on Wednesday on the eve of Sierra Leone's independence. Mr. Barrow has been accompanied by a sizable entourage. President Ernest Bai Nkrumah of Sierra Leone hosted a banquet dinner for Mr. Barrow and his delegation. The two leaders had a tete-a-tete meeting. Mr. Barrow has self-styled his tour of West Africa as a thank you tour. From Sierra Leone, he will be heading out to Liberia and Ghana. Nigeria is also among the countries he intends to visit.
Pandari, is he also looking for any kind of economic support from these neighboring countries?
Absolutely. Especially in Nigeria, President Barrow is hoping to at least strengthen the bilateral ties between the Gambia and Nigeria. But the trip has been greeted with mixed reaction in Banjulville. While some welcome the trip, others opine that the trip is a misplaced priority. The Gambia is currently battling with economic and national security challenges. The country has less than 2 months' import cover in its drying state coffers. Inflation is on the rise in the Gambia. Cost of living is also getting higher. There is massive youth unemployment in the country. The nation's energy sector is in shambles. Mr. Barrow has just clocked his 100 days in office, and apparently there is massive power outages in the country, acute water shortages as well. Hence, this past week, the government of the Gambia decided to sign an energy deal with a Chinese state company to help revamp the situation.
In terms of his 100 days in office, what has he accomplished?
So far, there are mixed feelings. Some are saying that there is freedom in the country. The Gambians are free now to speak up. They can criticize the government. There is also national security challenges currently confronting the government. Just this past week, the economic forces stationed in Banjul had a showdown with the Gambian armed forces stationed at the home of former President Yahya Jammeh in Kanilai. The Senegalese forces reportedly opened fire at the Gambian forces in what was described as an unprovoked incident, leaving three Gambian soldiers injured. Bill,
what does the government say about the incident?
The Minister of Interior, Maifati, indicated that it was an accident. There was somehow an accidental discharge of weapon in Kanilai. The economic forces are also saying that it was a misunderstanding and it will not happen again. But the National Assembly member for the area, Moussa Amoul Niazi, was quoted as saying that the Senegalese troops wanted to use his locality as a staging ground to attack the rebels in the southern province of Casamance. Senegal has been battling the rebellion in Casamance for decades now. Now that there is a transition in the Gambia, Senegal being the neighbor of the Gambia, some are saying that they wanted to fight two missions at the same time. One to help normalize the political situation in the Gambia. On the other hand, also to settle scores with the rebels along the border.
That's Pandere Mbai, founder and editor of the online Freedom newspaper. He spoke with VOA's William Eagle. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Seventeen minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. An African Union tribunal in Senegal rejects the appeal of former Chadian president Hissène Habré. A Burkina Faso court postpones the start of the trial of ex-president Blaise Compaoré and his former cabinet. And Gambian President Adama Barrow is on a West Africa tour and will visit Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ghana. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. South Africa is marking its annual Freedom Day holiday amid continued calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down. Tuso Kamalo reports from Pretoria, where demonstrations were organized by an alliance of opposition parties, religious groups, labor unions, and civil society.
South Africans gathered to celebrate the 23rd anniversary of the country's first post-apartheid elections. President Jacob Zuma addressed the main gathering in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal.
This day must be the day on which we are happy to contribute more in building South Africa. Happy Freedom Day to you all.
Speaking in Zulu, Zuma criticized opposition parties but did not directly address the ongoing political crisis. But in Pretoria, the tensions were on display.
Zuma must go! Zuma must go! Zuma must go!
Hundreds of people demonstrated Thursday in Port Elizabeth and Pretoria. The protest was organized by the newly formed Freedom Movement. Speakers at the gathering in Pretoria described Zuma as a danger to the country's hard-earned freedom. They accused him of flouting the constitution, corruption, and making uninformed decisions that have hurt the economy. Among the speakers was Ndileka Mandela, granddaughter of South Africa's father of freedom, Nelson Mandela.
The people shall govern. That means that the people have the right to call their government to account. We are today calling our government to account.
The protests come at a time when Parliament is preparing to vote on a motion of no confidence against President Zuma. Opposition parties have approached the Constitutional Court to request the vote be a secret ballot. and Democratic Alliance Party leader Musi Maimane, also at the protest, made it clear what that vote should achieve.
Zuma is no longer fit to become the president of the republic. And it's South Africans united saying, enough is enough.
The ruling ANC, with its majority in parliament, has been able to defeat an impeachment attempt and several votes of no confidence against Zuma since he took office in 2009. But a secret ballot in the upcoming vote would be a first and could leave Zuma more vulnerable. Meanwhile, the crisis took a new twist on Thursday as the country's Priority Crimes Unit announced it had arrested a 23-year-old man who authorities say was planning a hit on 19 people, including cabinet ministers believed to have benefited from Zuma's alleged corrupt dealings. Zuma has weathered several corruption scandals in the past year. This latest bout of opposition to Zuma began last month when he fired a popular finance minister. Many senior members of the ruling ANC and its alliance partners have recently openly called on Zuma to step down. An anti-Zuma march in the capital earlier this month drew tens of thousands of demonstrators. No new date has been set for the no-confidence vote as Parliament awaits the Constitutional Court's ruling. Tuso Khumalo for VOA News, Pretoria.
The aid organization Oxfam says climate change is making the humanitarian crises in the Horn of Africa worse. Regional Director Nigel Trix told Reuters that previously, once-in-a-lifetime droughts now come more often. He says for the first time, many camels and donkeys, which are typically hardy animals, are dying off. He adds the lives of pastoralists have been greatly disrupted. About 12 million people in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya are at risk of hunger due to drought. The UN warns that Somalia could slip into famine for the second time in 6 years. East Africa has seen poor rainfall for 3 years in a row while experiencing higher temperatures. A bipartisan panel of experts on Egypt-U.S. relations has urged Congress to rethink its annual $1.5 billion aid package to Cairo. They also described Egypt as a floundering authoritarian state. The scholars made their comments at a recent hearing of the Senate Appropriations Committee. VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi has details.
The three experts who testified at the hearing urged senators to rethink U.S. aid package to Egypt as the country fails to improve its human rights record. They argued that Egypt under President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is a military-run state with no respect for human rights and rampant with government-sponsored anti-Americanism. Michelle Dunn is the director of Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She began her remarks by mentioning recently leaked footage that appears to show Egyptian soldiers executing terror suspects in Sinai.
Egypt does face a serious threat from terrorism, but the unprecedented human rights abuses and political repression practiced by the government since 2013 is fanning the flames rather than putting them out. And the United States, at this point, it does not really have a way to ensure that our assistance is not making the problem worse instead of better.
Dunn commended President Trump's apparent reluctance to give Cairo whatever it wants as a positive sign. She said that during President Sisi's visit to Washington, he didn't get a promise from the administration to keep aid coming without questioning conditions in Egypt. President Barack Obama's former Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights, Tom Malinowski, focused his testimony on the persistent crackdown and repression in Egypt.
Over the last 2 or 3 years, the primary priority of the Egyptian military and of General Sisi has not been to fight terrorism or to improve governance. It has been to make sure that what happened in 2011, the Tahrir Square Rising, something like that can never, ever, ever, ever happen again in Egypt, and that the power of the military over the country's politics and economics is not challenged again.
Malinowski said, as a result, the military has concentrated on persecuting political opponents, peaceful protesters, and independent non-governmental organizations, the very people in Egypt who despise jihadists. Malinowski criticized Egypt for its attacks against U.S.-funded non-governmental organizations and urged President Donald Trump to adopt an America-first human rights policy. In his view, such a policy would call for the release of Egyptian-American political prisoners like aid worker Aya Hagazi. She and four other humanitarian workers were recently released after President Trump spoke with President El-Sisi on her behalf. Elliot Abrams, a senior fellow for Middle Eastern Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, urged Congress to link up to 25% of the annual $1.3 billion military assistance package to progress on human rights. Current law only restricts 15% of such aid. He said many of the big-ticket items Egypt is buying with the United States grants, such as fighter jets, are useless for battling terrorist threats such as the Islamic State, and accused Egypt of creating more jihadists through its operations in Sinai.
I mean, if you take 60,000 political prisoners, and that's the number that there are in Egypt, people who have not committed acts of violence, beat them up, toss them into prison, keep them there for years, incarcerate them with real jihadis, and what comes out at the end of that process is more jihadis.
Abrams argued also that Egypt has lost the regional influence it had when the United States urged it to make peace with Israel in the late 1970s. Senators of both parties in the committee seem to agree with much of the testimony offered by the panel. Committee Chairman Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said at the end of the hearing, "We need to reshape the relationship in a way that's sustainable. What I see is disheartening, and as to the taxpayers' dollars we have, I think we are obligated to spend them wisely, consistent with our values." The administration has proposed replacing military assistance grants with loans for all countries except Israel, and the State Department is seeking a 42% cut from $143 million to $75 million in economic aid to Egypt, according to draft budget documents obtained by Foreign Policy magazine. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Mohammed. In response to that report, Egypt's foreign ministry says the experts invited to testify at the Senate hearing are biased against Egypt. It says their testimony was an attempt to harm good relations between Egypt and the Trump administration. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Question, on what other radio program can you listen to Africa's hottest bangers and oldies in one smoking hour? Answer, none. Only Voice of America's Music Time in Africa gives you that. This week, I bring you the best music from the continent. Daddy, don't be mad. From Malawi to Mali, from Cameroon to Côte d'Ivoire. So tune in this Sunday, peeps, 1500 and 2000 UTC on your VOA Africa's FM station.